Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to For Geek's Sake. My name is Al Sterling, back with the actual crew, now allowed back in the United States after what we're just going to refer to as the incident. We have our co-host, Miss Danielle Bates.
That's not my name anymore.
Oh, whatever. Wilcheski, I'm sorry.
That's all right. And there was no incident.
Oh, right. That's right. Because, well, I mean, I guess that's true. If they seal the records, then it's like...
Oh, my gosh.
It's like it never happened.
I got to say, I was really, really impressed. I didn't think you could fit that much into, like, the
all
little
right,
compartment on the boat.
Now you are...
Well, I'm sure the boat doesn't have that much
trouble.
Room. Also, back with us, we are pleased to have producer Dan.
Hey, everyone.
And in order to school us properly, we had to reach all the way back to high school.
Yeah.
And actually, Dan and I both attended Lake Brantley High School, which is obviously the best high school in the world.
Excuse me. I went to Lake Mary, which is actually the best high school.
Oh, that's so cute. Aww. Anyway, back to real schools. Lake Brantley High School, best high school in the area. And we have the best physics teacher from the best high school.
That's right.
We are pleased to welcome Mr. Stan Cutler. How are you today, Stan?
I am great. I'm thrilled to be here with you guys. I did hear a little bit about that incident also. My sources through the school system. So, but we'll put that aside.
Really? I mean,
there was no incident.
I mean, speaking from a physics standpoint, the fact that that much fit on that small bit of a
all
boat
right,
and it still
guys.
Made it all the way from Jamaica.
It's all physics.
I didn't
that's
even
all
see
physics.
A
that's
boat.
Impressive. Well, of course you didn't. That's part of your statement. Anyway,
But thanks for inviting me, guys. This is great
absolutely.
To be here.
And I got
to
tell you, Stan showed up and started schooling us right from the word go. My man showed up in a Batman shirt with a cape and Batman socks.
He
absolutely.
Is the... He's pretty ridiculous. It's legit. He's the real deal.
It is awesome. I'm really, really
thank
impressed.
You, guys.
So,
he
says
he only wore it to school because it's prom week, but I don't buy it.
Well,
I bet that's what he wears every day.
Actually, ironically enough, what I wore to prom.
Yeah.
And I will have a Batman robe tomorrow because it's pajama day. So
nice. Going to continue.
Kind of right.
So how did you feel about Batfleck?
Batfrack.
Batfleck. What's his name?
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck
oh,
is Batman.
Oh, I. No comment.
All right.
No comment. I'm not a big Batman critique there. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Just more of a just a general lover of Batman.
Just I think the shirt was cheap at Walmart. So you know.
You can't argue with those kind of results.
That's right.
You just can't. All right. So before we get into This Week in Geek, we have a very exciting announcement. We've talked about it a little bit, but now we've actually got all of our ducks in a, they're not really in a row.
Didn't you?
But they're like in a rough column formation.
But didn't you like announce things last week that were firm and you're like, yeah, it's firm
right,
now.
But, right. But now I can get a little bit more details. It's a big deal. So what's happening here is For Geek's Sake is partnering with two other local geek groups. First, the Thirsty Gamers, which is the amazing board game meetup that you can find at Hourglass Brewery every Thursday night. And the fine folks over at Castrovi, which is a video game music podcast. We had Matt Heimerl, and we actually had Matt and Zach from Thirsty Gamers. They've both been on the show. So we are partnering together to create Geek Street Station. This is going to be a website dedicated to all things geek, full original content, lots of different media, just all sorts of stuff. And in order to celebrate that, we are throwing a straight-up launch party. So we are taking over the Hourglass Brewery in Longwood. And what's going to basically be happening there is prizes, giveaways. You can meet and hang out with us. We'll be recording a bonus episode of the show there as well. We've got a whole bunch of cool stuff going on. So we really, really hope you guys will be out there. Oh, I'm sorry. And drink specials. I should have mentioned the drink specials.
That's the most important part.
Right. And for the entertainment, we've got Epic Events. Dan Benoit from Epic Events. I don't know if you've ever heard
that
of him or not.
That guy's awesome,
I
hear.
Wait, what's Epic Events? I've never heard of that.
I know. It's surprising. We'll talk about it later. Also,
I'm sure we will.
We also are going to have a professional photo booth out there. Lots of really cool stuff. So that is Friday, May 20th, 7 p.m., Hourglass Brewery. 7 p.m. is when it kicks off. That is in Longwood, Florida. To Hourglass Brewery, May 20th. You should come because cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's.
Yeah. My biggest question now is should I wear my favorite Doctor Who shirt or my favorite Harry Potter shirt?
Ooh, it's a hard
that's
call.
A decision.
It's
it
a
is.
Hard call.
It's a hard decision.
You might have to do a costume change halfway through.
Honestly, because otherwise I feel like I'm drawing a hard line and telling
I think
people
you are.
This is who I am.
What if you did a Doctor Who? With a Hogwarts scarf.
I do have a TARDIS hoodie, so I could wear the zip-up hoodie over a Gryffindor t-shirt.
All right, costume changes aside, let's dive into some This Week in Geek. First
you
of all,
you guys missed me so much.
Sure. Hanna-Barbera Cinematic Universe.
You guys,
those are some special words that you put together.
Okay, so
it looks like Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, actually, it turns out it does. There's an E there.
It corrected on me.
Over the rut row. You beat me to it, actually.
Yeah. I was a little, I'm sorry.
No, it was good. I was upset that I didn't do it faster. So they are relaunching Scooby-Doo, and apparently Scooby-Doo is going to work for some kind of a government organization.
Because, of course.
Right. And so they get kind of like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing going on. Because why wouldn't they? And they're planning on using this to relaunch the Hanna-Barbera. To launch the Hanna-Barbera Cinematic Universe in the same way that you've got with Marvel. So all of these different Hanna-Barbera properties are going to be in. So
is it interconnected?
Yes, that's the idea.
How are you going to do that with Flintstones and the Jetsons?
They've met. There was a movie where they met.
True. Okay. Across multiple timelines? I don't know. We sent Danielle on a fact-finding mission.
Oh, boy.
Because we needed to make sure that we had the we had this right. So, Danielle, share with us some of the what characters we can be expecting in this very exciting, quote-unquote.
Well, Hanna-Barbera owns and has rights to about 1 million properties. Mm-hmm. And so it would have taken me hours to tally a list of characters. So instead, I went with properties, ones that I felt maybe were more popular.
All right.
So obviously, we have the Flintstones, the Jetsons, Scooby-Doo, Yogi Bear, Johnny Quest, Space Ghost, Smurfs. They did an animated show of the Berenstain Bears and mm-hmm. Pound Puppies.
Pound Puppies. Yeah.
They did Popeye. They did an animated Paddington Bear TV show. They had Tom and Jerry several times throughout the years. They started Tom and Jerry, got rid of Tom and Jerry, got back Tom and Jerry, et cetera, et cetera. Dexter's Laboratory, Johnny Bravo, Cow and Chicken. Of course,
Johnny Bravo's Hanna-Barbera?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And of course, Powerpuff Girls, which is super popular right now. Everyone's Powerpuff
okay,
girling themselves.
Okay, so this is making a little bit more sense to me.
And the last two is they did animated versions of Josie and the Pussycats and Addams Family. There were like 1 million more, but
sure.
Those
oh, yeah.
were just the list I
did
got.
Did anybody else watch the Laugh Olympics?
No.
Do you remember this cartoon show?
I remember
show?
That, yeah.
This was so the idea here was there were three teams. There was the Scooby-Doo team, there was the Yogi Bear team, and then there was the bad guy team. And all of the different Hanna-Barbera cartoon characters. We're talking like Snagglepuss and what's his name? The Huckleberry Hound and
these
kind of like really like the old school guys
that
like Trixie and Dixie. You remember those? And Felix, or Mr. Jinx, the cat, like those guys. And they would have all of these weird mock Olympic games every week, and they would see who would win. And it was always either the Yogi Bear team or the Scooby-Doo team because, you know.
Right.
Because
it's rude to let the bad guys win.
I think I saw one episode where they won. And that's really what I imagined. But then producer Dan here shared with us this right here. This is for the comic books that they're also relaunching from DC.
Right, because apparently Warner Brothers has owns now the rights to all the Hanna-Barbera stuff. And they also, of course, are connected with DC through all their movies. So they are going to do a comic book line relaunch of a bunch of the properties. And I put up some images. You'll see them in the show notes on Geek Street Station. It's kind of a futuristic looking Scooby-Doo and just a different stylized version of the Flintstones.
As a fan of the Gem comic books, this is a really cool idea for them to do because like comic books are really popular right now.
My issue here. Shaggy is rocking what looks like some kind of Shakespearean facial hair.
Yeah, hipster.
And a sleeve. He's got a tattooed sleeve coming down there.
Yeah.
And it looks like Velma is now 13. And is launching little robot things?
Drone.
I guess she's some drone warfare, and Scooby
she's controlling a drone.
Scooby's teched out, and both...
He has a bionic eye.
And both of them, what's it? Velma and...
No, not Velma.
No. Freddie Prinze Jr. and the redhead. I don't even remember their names
anymore.
And
Sarah Michelle Gellar. That's right. Where they met. That's true.
Velma and Louise.
That was different. That was different. Although Hanna-Barbera may own them,
isn't
too.
Isn't it Fred?
Fred and Daphne.
There we go.
Both look heavily armed.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going in a slightly different direction than the Scooby-Doo that I remember watching where they ran into the Harlem Globetrotters. This feels like a slightly different.
And when they were like the meddling kids,
right? Now like... they're a bunch of grown ups who apparently have kidnapped this little girl, and they have a hipster buddy who's abused a dog. Like I don't know. Yeah. All right. Actually, the Flintstones I actually have very little problem with, other than it's very clear
it's
that...
It's so sexualized.
It is.
Is it?
I like it.
Wilma and Betty are, like, sexy...
They're wearing the exact same outfit that they've always worn. It's just that their legs have a little more detail.
Yeah. No. Their legs have more detail.
Well, hey, so do Fred and Barney. Fred and Barney are showing some thigh.
Their waists are so skinny. They've got perfect, perky breasts. Their faces are adorable. Like, that's not what cave people
look
like.
Draw them uglier.
I don't know. You may need to go back and take another look at the original cartoon.
Yeah. No, that is way more sexual.
Because Betty's always been a Betty. I'm sorry.
That is too sexual. That's why Bam Bam has a bone.
Moving on. Let's talk some Doctor. So I'm sorry. Last note on this. I'm not sure a Hanna-Barbera universe is a completely wise idea, but it will be hilarious to watch if we can get Fred Flintstone and the Powerpuff Girls in the same place.
Yes. Also, I feel like they should have put the in the hands of Marvel and not DC because.
Oh come on! DC's got such a great track record right now.
Oh yeah, sure.
Speaking of Marvel, the Doctor Strange trailer dropped. So we talked about the trailer dropped literally the day after we recorded the summer movie preview, right? I think they did that on purpose. Mm-hmm. I'm not positive, but I think Marvel did it to me.
It was a plot against you.
I'm assuming, and maybe not me personally, but definitely against For Geek's Sake. So it probably something to do with you and the damn bus.
No, actually,
it's a Jamaican plot.
It was.
Yeah, exactly.
They told me if I was there, they were gonna drop it for me because I'm such a Benedict Cumberbatch fan.
Right. Yeah, I had to feel it was something to do with you and that boat. So, Doctor Strange trailer dropped, looked amazing.
I know nothing about Doctor Strange, and I loved everything about that. That movie looked awesome.
So what did you what's now are you a Marvel movie watcher?
Not really, but I'm kind of in the same boat. I know nothing about them, and it looked pretty intriguing to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He did. Benedict Cumberbatch looks amazing.
Great American accent.
Great American accent.
Seriously, that guy. I know that Dan Parker has argued with me before on Benedict Cumberbatch's range, but I think he's an amazing actor. Mm-hmm. Also, I liked the fact that like it started out with like these are different realities, so you know that there's something funky with the time-space continuum.
Little wibbly wobbly,
little strange,
timey-wimey,
if you will.
This looks
and Tilda.
Oh yeah, she looks awesome.
The ancient one.
What I'm curious here. There's two points that I'm curious about. First of all, Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Doesn't Iron Fist overlap with Doctor Strange at some point?
Well, they're all in New York, so yeah.
Well, no. I mean, like, aren't their power?
They're
stuff?
Both in New York, and they both have mystic powers.
Is Iron?
So yeah, they're gonna cross over at some
Is
point.
Iron Fist a character? Because it sounds more like a weapon.
He's a character.
He is a weapon.
But I mean, it sounds like brass knuckles, Iron Fist.
Right.
Like,
no, it's a
James Bond character. Yeah.
It does sound like a James Bond. Mm-hmm. I'd like the very Inception feel.
Yes.
But in a way that didn't feel like the way they, because they ripped off a lot of stuff from Inception and further movies, but mostly it was just that noise that they made during the preview.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that noise that they put in every other, I think was required. I actually saw it in Zootopia. They made that. It was just really a strange choice, but they did. But with I like that you stared at me for a minute. Like I don't remember that trailer. But the way that they had the cityscapes going and the way that they're jumping through multiple realities. This I was not convinced that you could take a superhero movie and get deep into the magic idea. And but I also didn't think you could do it with space. But Marvel's now proven me wrong in both scores because they. Whooped ass with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Marvel's smarter than you.
It is, it turns out.
Like, another thing is, again, I know nothing about Doctor Strange, but they obviously care about his hands. Because in the trailer, they kept going to his hands being, like, bandaged and in the slings or whatever. So, obviously, there's something important going on there. And it's exciting. Like, I feel like they didn't... I feel like with the first BVS trailer, we felt like we knew too much about the movie. I know that we ended up not.
No, actually, I feel like we did. We did too much.
But with this, especially because I don't know the comic at all, like I'm like, oh my god, tell me more. Like, tell me more.
I will.
Okay.
quick origin story on Doctor Strange. He was a brain surgeon,
I like it.
He was in a car accident and destroyed his hands, basically.
But that's in one reality.
Well, this is his actual origin story.
This is just his origin
story. We have no idea what they're going to do with the multiple reality deal. But
is this Ben Carson or Dr. Strange we're talking
Dr.
about?
Dr. Strange. Yeah.
Okay. This guy's a little less sleepy.
Yes.
Who's Ben Carson?
He was running for president. Don't worry about it. Anyway.
It's a good thing we're a geek podcast, not a political podcast.
He tried everything medical to get his hands fixed, couldn't do anything. So he starts reaching out to the world of mysticism, finds the Ancient One, played by Tilda, and basically gets empowered with the, what is it called? The Power Mystic.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is they took Benedict Cumberbatch, mixed him with magic, and I'm supposed to not love this?
No, you are supposed to love this.
I'm going to love this.
Yes.
It's everything I love about everything.
I'm going to remind you that you still have that restraining order.
There's no Jason Momoa in it.
There's also no Jason Momoa.
Okay.
Let's talk solar panels. This one was on the website. They have now developed the solar panel. Switching gears, by the way.
They developed solar panels a long time ago.
Right. This particular one, though. Thank you for reminding me. This particular one they've designed is able to pick up and create energy based off of rainwater rolling down the panel. So it is, I believe, and again, this way we have a scientist in the room. From what I was able to understand, they've got a one atom thick layer of a carbon fiber or some nano fiber thing.
Or something.
And so basically what that does is it lets it absorb the kinetic energy of the rain rolling down the panel. That is insane.
It is.
My eyes just rolled back into my head because I
don't
even get
it. Sounds
like
one of those mats, the piezoelectric mat
that
you step on and the vibrations you store. I'm not familiar with this, but
That actually does. It makes a lot of sense.
Okay. I saw something that UCF, when that came up, I thought it was a UCF solar mat that I saw some students had over on a pond. It might be the first one in the nation, floating solar mat.
Oh, that's cool.
Is really cool.
Yeah, it was just in the paper the other day.
I wonder if this is the same thing. I did a little bit of research onto this because I looked at this and I thought, well, that means one Florida summer should power the state because – during the summer, it is either 100 degrees of direct sunlight that will kill you, or there's a thunderstorm that will also kill you.
Yeah. And it only lasts for about an hour, but it is torrential.
Right. So either way, you get the energy.
Exactly. I think this was but they did. I looked it up too.
This would be awful in Chicago, though, where they never get sun and it's really windy, not always rainy.
Right. So I guess maybe you splash it with water and let the wind do the rest. I don't know.
Pick up wind vibration.
This picks up at 6.53% efficiency.
That doesn't sound very efficient.
It's not. But a normal solar panel pulls between 11 to 15% efficiency.
Oh.
So this picks up a little bit less, but it's also picking up the water. And that's
And that's also during times when you wouldn't be getting any power out of it because there's no sunlight.
Exactly. So instead of 0%, it's picking up 6.53, which is a definite uptick.
Don't they store the energy for times when the sun's not out? Isn't that
how it
works?
Right. But now you can store even more.
You can continue to charge it.
Well, if you got that boat, I mean, obviously you can store just about anything on that thing.
I don't know how she did that.
Well, this is cool though because, but people talk about solar panels and like rain barrels and stuff. This is kind of like you could put a solar panel on top of your rain barrel.
Exactly, you could, and it's.
Could you put the water on it yourself?
You could, but I feel like there's better ways to generate electricity at that point. I mean, at that point, you might as well just push a little turbine in a circle because you're probably
At that point, you might as well jump in the hamster wheel yourself.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. We live in the sunshine state, and we're still so far down in solar.
Exactly.
Energy. It's crazy. Ridiculous.
It is. It's crazy.
Disney has been beefing their solar energy. They are like building fields of solar panels.
Yep.
They have a whole lot of property out there. So,
You're driving in and you just see fields of solar panels.
So, catch one more. We're going to keep rocking here. Sean Parker has decided to solve cancer. Not cure. And I want to be very clear about this.
Right.
Sean Parker is one of the guys behind Napster. Which is I think
you might know him as Justin Timberlake in The Social Network.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Because he plays. So if you've seen The Social Network, the guy that's the character that he's based on here. So this guy has been instrumental in two of these. I love, however, the guy that gave us Napster, that showed us how to steal music, is now decided to solve cancer. And I say solve because what he basically did was set up this inter-university project, get into a bunch of different universities to truly coalesce their research. Because normally what happens here is this. You have a great idea and you're working for a university. The university either bankrolls it or sets up grants or finds funding for you to do it. And then whatever you're creating is more or less owned by whoever paid for it.
Right. That's what happened on Big Bang Theory.
Right. So this – well, if you – good. That
must
so,
be true.
Right. So – since you've seen the documentary, I'll move on. The problem here, though, is that when the people – this stuff is really expensive to do. So when you put down hundreds of millions of dollars, you expect some kind of a repayment, which is why you see all these things, particularly the pharmaceutical industry is a great example of kind of what happens as a result of this. Mm-hmm. So Sean Parker said, no, I'm rich. So I'm going to put in a bunch of money. I've got some rich friends. They're going to put in a bunch of money. We're going to create this foundation, essentially, that is going to allow all of these different universities to put what they're finding together and basically what is like open source, but only for mega geniuses. Because there's no – there. All of these people are collaborating and putting their stuff together, whereas usually there maybe one or two universities or two or three universities are working together, but mostly each individual university is working on their own thing.
This is awesome, and I hope that it has great results, but I would just like to remind everyone how I Am Legend started.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. We could be actually killing ourselves. But I still have money on Robot Apocalypse well over...
vampire zombies?
Yeah, vampire zombies. Listen, any form of zombie is going to get no foothold in the United States.
The vampire zombies were intense in I Am Legend.
We have a heavily armed society that is... infinitely prepared for a zombie apocalypse of any form or fashion.
I'm not saying...
The style of zombie... any zombie apocalypse in the United States will last approximately 15 minutes.
You're right. We're not prepared for anything else.
No.
Except zombies.
Right. Yeah, no, like...
Zombies.
In fact, Stan, I don't know if you heard our previous episode, but one of our early episodes, we had in a gentleman from Seminole County, and they actually run a zombie apocalypse drill every Halloween in Seminole County.
For the... Yeah, the disaster response team.
I remember... hearing something about
that. Yeah, that's pharmaceutical grade M&Ms. That was one of my favorite named episodes ever.
That's a great one.
We're supposed to have some sort of moonshot going on. Joe Biden is in charge of it, a moonshot to cure cancer where they're putting. So I wonder if there's any type of tie in there.
I don't know. Well, this is because the other one that this reminded me, though, is on top of that, when there was also the one that we heard about from Mark Zuckerberg, who got together with a bunch of his genius friends, and I think they were tackling. What was he tackling? He was
tackling one. Maybe, or
then maybe homelessness, and then I think Bill Gates got together with some of his rich buddies.
I know how to cure homelessness. Gates. You build homes.
Okay, good. Well, that's
and start. Give them jobs.
Oh, is that all we have to do? Okay, well, great.
And
somebody
teach them.
Somebody get Obama on the phone. It turns out this entire time that was all we had to do.
I thought you had said homeliness, and I thought, okay, good. They'll cure me. Thank God.
Homeliness is cured. With a different kind of doctor.
Right.
So.
But it's curable. Yes. It's curable. I mean, in some cases. I don't know. It's extreme. Anyway, but yeah, so then we have all – basically what we've got is a renaissance of these philanthropists, rich people just deciding to start solving problems. But the same thing that we saw the robber barons as they got older – this is the oil barons and all these guys in the 1920s, eventually got old and didn't want to be remembered as criminals and evil people. So they, it's Carnegie and...
Ironic that it's Sean Parker doing this too, because he's the Napster guy.
Yeah, well, listen.
Yeah, and how is he rich? Didn't he run a service that taught people how to steal?
Yeah, and then he sold it before he got caught.
Okay. And then went on to help found Facebook.
Yeah,
so,
that didn't help. That didn't hurt either.
I didn't know that. I didn't watch the Social Network movie, whatever it's called. So
you'd like it.
But what I'm noticing here is not just rich philanthropists, rich geek philanthropists.
Yes.
Which is...
Hey-o.
I'm just saying that...
Infinitely better.
Yeah, well, we used to say that, when we were nerds in high school, we comforted ourselves by saying things like, one day guys like that will work for guys like me. Not me in particular, it turns out, because I'm...
Right.
Right.
But it turns out now...
It's happening to others.
Guys like me are... curing everything, although I don't know if I can.
You are not.
I don't know if
I
get the like
that.
Me. I don't even get the no. like me. Other guys that probably got beat up in high school. I think that's
there. You go. Okay.
Okay.
That's about
now,
all we have in common.
Now we're on the right page.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
What are you gonna do?
All right.
The other thing here that I do want to mention on this one though is the foundation does own the results.
Okay.
Which is one of the pieces that has got some people concerned that they will then use this or whatever. But part of the charter that they're setting up is basically to, as soon as they have this, release it.
Again, this is how all the movies start, where he gets in the wrong hands.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do?
like cry, the idea. Die, right. I don't know.
Last bit here before we get into our main topic. You know what, Dan? I just want you to you tackle this one.
All right, I have very mixed feelings on this because DC, both now in their cinematic universe and in their comic book universe, just keeps making things more difficult, more convoluted.
Okay, I thought you were about to drop a major spoiler on the BBA.
No. So we've mentioned a few times that they're going to be doing their rebirth, where they're rebooting all of their titles from one, much like All New, All Different. They do this in 2011 with the New 52.
They are awesome at copycatting.
Actually, they did it in 2008 with the original 52.
Right.
I'm just saying.
So
they're really good at doing everything Marvel does.
But one of the things that they couldn't do with New 52, when they did the New 52, they could not get rid of the old Superman because there was too many fans that were fans of that continuity that would just revolt if they did that. So alongside the New 52, they've had the, what is it? It's called Superman, the Lois and Clark Adventures.
Okay.
And
like Dean Cain or
No. Similar.
Dean Cain and
but in this they're married and they've got a son named John. And this other Superman exists and he knows about it and he's like, this guy's screwing up and they're going to blame me for it. So I'm going to go underground. He starts wearing a black costume and it's all very confusing. So with the rebirth, what they're going to do is put him back in the original costume. They're going to kill off the current Superman. And his powers are going to be dispersed among several individuals, including what they're calling the new Superman, but with a hyphen. So Super-Man. And his name is, let me make sure I pronounce this right, it's Kenan Kong. And they did that
to King.
Right. They wanted to have kind of similar to the Clark Kent thing, but he is a Chinese version of Superman, basically.
I think that this is probably great for some people.
Okay.
I was actually sitting here wondering, is Danielle about to say something incredibly racist?
No!
The way she said it real slowly and looking around, I'm like, she's about to say something incredibly.
This sounds really stupid. Like, why?
Because they have to make things more confusing and convoluted. It's what DC does.
Here's the thing. They couldn't, using air quotes, get rid of Superman because Superman has too many fans.
Right.
Here's an idea, DC. Maybe just keep the one that everyone loves and stop trying to mess it all up.
Well, at first they did get rid of him, and then there was so much backlash that they had to go back into the multiverse, basically, to bring him back, and it was all very weird.
If you're just bored of Superman, that's fine, but this seems like a little extreme.
Well, not only that, but also to go along the lines of copying Marvel, with their All New, All Different, just reinvented the Hulk as an Asian character as well.
It's very trendy.
Again.
It is.
Again, DC is awesome at copycatting.
You know what? DC, you do great animated movies.
Yeah.
Hey, if you can get a few billion more fans to watch your franchise.
Exactly. True.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear China's a big market.
Yeah.
Slightly.
They've got a few people over there. So we'll keep an eye on this one.
At least like 5 people.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 10.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into our main topic here. So last week, we talked about this a little bit during the This Week in Geek.
Yeah.
But we wanted to give this one a little bit more. Stephen Hawking came out last week, made an announcement alongside Yuri. I didn't write down his name.
I've got it somewhere here.
Oh, good.
Yuri Milner.
Yes. Yuri Milner. There we go. That basically they could get to Alpha Centauri in a little over 20 years.
Now, and let's remind people that are like me and aren't so spacey, what's Alpha Centauri?
I love the word spacey. That is my favorite adjective.
What is Alpha Centauri?
So Alpha Centauri is the next closest star,
but
with the sun being, of course, the closest one.
Okay, because the sun is closer.
Right.
A little bit.
A little, yeah. Thank, good news, which is good, because otherwise it'd be, we'd be just a frozen ball so with
like,
no gravitational.
So, like, yes. After the sun, all those stars we see in the sky, they're like, you can't even get to them.
No, well, we actually can't get to any of them, including Alpha Centauri.
Some of those are planets, too.
Oh,
right.
That's true.
Well, right. Yeah.
But the, so the up until this announcement, if I'm getting this correct, they said to get to Alpha Centauri would take us the entire time that humanity has existed. It would take us that long to get to Alpha Centauri.
Which basically, from the time that we walked out of Africa.
Okay.
I was going to say, are you going Christian or evolution here?
Let's just go with...
it's very different.
How about this? Let's go with approximately 30,000 years.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay.
Okay.
Not
so
five.
That...
So wait, they were saying it would take us 30,000 years...
Give them credit. Six,
from...
not five.
They were saying it would take us 30,000 years from right now.
Right.
Right. If
like,
we launch something
I
today...
left, it would take me 30,000 years.
Like the vehicle that's gone the furthest from Earth is the Voyager space probe.
I feel like Doctor Who is the one for this.
If Voyager went to Alpha Centauri, it would take 30,000 years.
So
okay.
That's where
at
we...
the speed it's going.
Right.
Right.
So that was where we
How
were...
How fast is it going?
Well, Voyager... Now, Voyager was launched in 77, the two Voyagers, and I was about the age that you guys were when I taught you.
Yes.
Back in 77, so I was following that for years. That was cool, the first pictures of these planets that we were flying by. And now, I don't have the speed of Voyager. I actually have a little article here on it. But remember, once you're in space and you're shooting along there, and you get up to a certain speed, there's nothing to slow you down.
Yeah,
so
no friction.
There's no friction. There's nothing slowing down Voyager right now. It's still sending signals back.
This is the same ship that launched in 1977.
77.
It's still out there going somewhere.
And it was actually only supposed to be reporting back for, what, 15 years, 20 years? And it just keeps sending data.
And there's no one on it.
Correct.
It's
no.
Unmanned.
Right.
And so no women like, either.
There actually was a dog. It's tragic. We don't want to talk about it.
So it's kind of like a drone spaceship.
It's a satellite.
It is.
Okay.
A probe,
right.
Yeah. So
okay.
Now, so with that as our... There you go. I'm
Yay!
Proud of you.
Thank
so with
you.
That as our backdrop, Stan, tell us about this one and where it's going. Oh, I'm sorry. We currently have the Voyager 1 max speed. We looked it up real quick. 38,610 miles an hour currently.
Okay. So what... I can't even compute how fast that is.
It's super, super fast, but it is nothing in space.
But the problem that we've always had is that once you leave the Earth's atmosphere, we don't have any way of accelerating. Unless you're going to like whip around the moon or something like that.
Do we have any way of steering?
Well, steering is physics formula, so and slight thrusters, so steering can be done.
Even
so,
but, with no gravity.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So, but let's take a second here. Tell us about, Stan, tell us about Hawking's announcement and what it means.
Well, it's nebulous in what it means, because this is a LightSail is an actual program out there, Planetary Society, and they actually have put solar sails into space. And, well, actually almost into space.
Well, pause real quick and explain to us what a solar sail is.
Thank you. I was just going to write that down, later.
I can see you're wondering there.
Very good. So there's a little bit of a wind coming from the sun, but it's not a wind like from air. It's a pressure. It's pressure from the particles that are leaving the sun. And these particles, these photons, can actually push against an object in space. And because there's nothing to... no friction, mm-hmm. nothing to slow it down. If you can give it a little push, you can start making it accelerate. If you can put a little force on it, Newton's second law, right? F equals mm-hmm. ma, a little force on it, and you can get that mass to start accelerating. If you have a long enough time and you can keep that force on it, even if it's just a small force, then it starts accelerating at a greater and greater rate. And now you're talking about maybe getting it up to a fraction of the speed of light, mm-hmm. which is 186,000 miles a second, or 300 million kilometers a second, and maybe up to one-fifth of that speed or so, and possibly make it to an Alpha Centauri, like you said, in 20 years or so. The question my students have when I brought this up to them is basically why. Why would we do this?
That's what I said. And Al said, don't say that.
No. That's not what I said.
Well, I played devil's advocate with them, and I said, okay, well, why do people climb Mount Everest? I mean, why do it? Well, because it's there, and you challenge yourself. And that's kind of how Hawking ended his announcement there about what makes human beings so unique is transcending our limits. So is there a practical reason to try to push this postage size stamp to Alpha Centauri? Not that I see. Might there be better uses for funds or for trying to get into space, interstellar space, perhaps? But it is a pretty tantalizing prospect.
No, I really thought this thing is sending back data the entire time it's going.
Right.
And for me, the real big – for me, I guess the part that I'm most excited about is just this idea of interstellar travel. Mm-hmm. You know, this gets us one step closer to being able to get there. But like you said, I think what you mentioned, it's important too. These are postage stamp size
computers.
Even a ship is probably not – accurate.
It's a ship, not a ship. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
That's what the article says.
The thing back when light sail was first being considered, people were going, well, what's the point of sending a sail up there with nothing attached to it? Because you can't send a supercomputer that takes up the size of, you know, three of our studio. And now with microtechnology, thanks to cell phones and mm-hmm. everything else, they've got the technology so small that you're basically just sending a chip into space, which it's collecting all this data. It's constantly probing. And it's going to tell us more about our existence, about how we got here, about how everything got to be, and about what else is out there.
And
this is our best chance so far of finding other intelligent life.
I mean, and I think there's also some really interesting stuff to understand about why, for example, Voyager is still sending data back decades after it should have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that because there's nothing out there, it's probably, I'm assuming that they're coming to a point where there's nothing there, so there's nothing to stop it. There's nothing to wear it down. In the same way that anything you leave on Earth is going to eventually start to be broken down
mm-hmm.
By all of the different things that exist on Earth. I want to know, however, about a little bit more the practical side of this, because I thought this part was incredibly interesting. So they're launching this – they're powering this by shooting lasers at it.
Right. So I was mentioning solar before, but the solar would give out at a certain point, maybe once it got past Mercury or mm-hmm. wherever, you'd be down to a spot where there's not enough solar anymore. And they're talking about aiming an array of lasers
mm-hmm.
right to hit this little solar cell. Actually, the solar cell would be bigger than the postage size ship. But
right.
So the cell would be unfurled, and they'd hit this. Well, it wouldn't be a solar. It would be a laser cell or a maser cell and with microwave. And it would provide the force. And what I look at from Earth, and they had a little on the article, they had a little simulation. And I'm looking and saying, okay, well, what if something flies in the path of that
exactly.
laser?
I mean, we have planes, and then even once you get up to outer space, we have so many space junk
exactly.
floating around. You read about these things occasionally running into problems with the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so, yeah, any of those. But here's what I'm trying to understand.
Well,
will the laser, like, if the thing's sitting, like, just theoretically, if you put your hand directly over where the laser's firing off, is it the type of laser that does damage? Like,
well, okay, first of all, they're not setting up a laser. And they're not sending a light sail. They're sending a series of these things. They're saying that they can get the cost on these things down to less than an iPhone, so that they can be
which
mass
is still overpriced.
Yes,
but
iPhones
right.
are expensive.
That's not really the point.
Well, at cost, iPhone cost is pretty low.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
But what they're going to do is send out thousands of these things, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a chain, and one is going to shoot a laser at the next to keep them going. So it's not just one beam going from Earth to Alpha Centauri.
Yes.
How? Okay.
Your brain is like melting.
They are sending a series of small things.
Yes.
How are they controlling where these small things are going to be in space?
Physics controls it.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, okay, so you said like a computer chip, right?
Yeah.
Is that the size of something that they're sending out there?
It's going to be about like a quarter.
How can they control?
Oh, yeah. They don't have like, you asked about like thrusters.
Yeah, like how do they position it? I don't understand.
There are certain points in space that are special points. I think they're called Lagrangian points that mm-hmm. where you're right at a certain distance in between Sun and Earth, and you can get stuff to kind of just hang out there. And those are places where you want to have a satellite that's up studying the Sun, or you want to have maybe one of these satellites if they're talking about doing that.
What makes my brain melt when I think about all this is I watched a video the other day on Facebook where, you know, it brought up the point that Earth, the sun isn't stationary. You know, that our sun is rotating through the Milky Way, and we are rotating around it as it travels. So we're corkscrewing through space. And we're going to be able to control the trajectory of these things.
Oh, God, and then you've got to hit Alpha Centauri, which is also spinning.
Yes.
At least two or three different axes at the same time.
Yeah, wow. That's what I'm saying. That's why this is all so incredible that they've actually worked all this out.
Your brain melt is like 5 degrees past my brain melt. Uh-huh. I'm still stuck on... All right, whatever. You know, I'm not spacey. It's okay.
Yeah, it is okay.
But the idea here is a very interesting idea. Personally, I'm not sure if it'll ever happen, but I do think that we'll have sales. I mean, the company out there is supposed to have the Light Sail 2, I guess. Light Sail 1 made it up in the atmosphere, and they didn't intend for that to go into space. But Light Sail 2 now has a launch date less than a year from now, March of 2017.
Now, I saw the – what about the Bill Nye Kickstarter?
That's Bill Nye.
Is that number two? Or is that one?
Well, Bill Knight is the CEO, I believe, of this company.
He's the president of the Planetary Society.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. So this is all of their stuff that they're okay.
Yeah, somebody, I think Sarah Palin just said, Bill Knight, he's no scientist. He's like like me, and he graduated from Cornell astrophysics, you know, major or something.
Yeah,
so,
no, I'm pretty sure he's a little above.
He's a scientist.
He's spacey
and an engineer.
Can he see Russia?
He's also an engineer.
Yeah, Cornell. Top engineering school, and
he's incredible. It's really has blown my mind. So, how all of this stuff? How is this possible to be used for manned stuff? I mean, not to maybe to Alpha Centauri, but you know, we're still aiming at Mars pretty hardcore here. So, I mean, do you think the solar sail and these laser and the laser technology and all that stuff? Do you think this can be used to get us there?
I don't think so. It has to do with acceleration partly and how much acceleration humans can take. And this is an exciting time, though. I was thinking about that on the drive here today, that we're in Central Florida, and company after company, if you're reading the papers and seeing all these companies, some that I never heard of before, are talking about coming to Central Florida and starting to launch satellites or build satellites or it's exciting because a few years ago the shuttle program ended. A lot of people lost jobs, and people said, "Oh, NASA's out of business," which they never were. They were out of the shuttle business.
Right.
And now we're a couple of years away from, and it's already started, of just tons of launches going on and manned flights as well as satellites. So I think it's a real exciting
time.
Which
is great
because
even before the space shuttle shut down, I mean, that's kind of like the dark ages of space exploration for us, because we turned into basically a bus system where we were just taking people back and forth to the space station and not doing any new exploration. This is new. This is going to teach us so much more that you know, about places that we've never even dreamed of.
Yeah, and it's true, because SpaceX just recently managed to land their rocket back on
vertically
the platform.
On the barge, yes.
Vertically, yeah, which is just so that basically SpaceX has been launching these rockets and trying to get them to come back down. Turns out getting them to come back down is not the hard part. Real easy to get them to come back down. The problem is
getting them back down the right way.
Exactly.
Without killing everyone.
Right.
And being able to kill anyone.
They're trying to make it so that they won't kill anyone.
So people could actually
live. Right.
And so now they've managed to land the thing upright on the platform.
Barge.
If they can do that 100 more times, I'll go.
A lot more than 100. I'm going to need a lot more than 100.
Well, people are lined up. I mean, we've got people that have put down deposits with private companies on going to Mars on a one-way trip. And you're never coming back.
Right.
You know, and there are tons of people that are ready to do that if they got the okay to do it. So.
That sounds a lot like when you buy a timeshare in Arizona, you know.
And hope they build the hotel.
Or Florida.
Yeah. like it sounds a lot like, oh, yeah, give me your money. And, you know, like, are they going to get their money back if they never go to Mars?
Probably. Of course, the time value of money, if you put mm-hmm. $10,000 down, and then 20 years later, you get it back. You've lost a lot of money.
Yes. That's true.
But yeah. But I don't know.
I mean, so are you wanting to take a one-way trip there to Mars?
No.
No, me neither.
I won't be one of them. But
No, I was like, I'd like to say, I don't want to be the first one. I don't want to be the thousandth one. Once you get to the hundreds of thousands of people, at that point, I'll consider it if there's a two-way trip, and
but
I need to know.
Someday, Al, to the moon. To the moon. Like that little play there.
That's good. Kind of come back there. I like what you did there. I like what you did there.
I just feel like we should finish killing this planet before we worry about others.
We're getting pretty close to it.
Yeah,
so
we're doing a good job.
I mean, we're really. I don't want to brag or anything.
Or
we're
maybe,
really good at this.
Maybe we could use these resources that we're using for exploration to. You know what? I'm just going to keep on.
One of my students said, "Hey, how about that $100 million? Why don't we use that to cure cancer?" The other thing
I'm just,
that was up there.
I'm just saying, like, we could be researching, you know, energy solutions and, you know, oil and like all that. Like, we could be putting all this money to use on saving our planet rather than looking to escape our planet.
At the same time, so many advancements. Like, you wouldn't have a cell phone right now if it wasn't for the space program. Because
you wouldn't have Velcro right now if it wasn't for the space program.
But nanotechnology started there.
I'm not wearing any Velcro, so I don't care.
I am.
That's right. You certainly would not have your smartwatch if it wasn't for NASA.
All right, now you're getting a little close to the belt.
Right.
And what you're talking about, again, it's probably a good investment to put money, and especially drop in the bucket, this type of program.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
In terms of what you're going to get out of it, maybe towards saving the planet.
Well, and I think that this is also really interesting. And the idea, and you're not wrong, Danielle. There's a lot of people who have said something very similar, you know. But the thing is, I mean, as we talked about even earlier in the episode, there's already so many people looking at so many different ideas. And I think the really important part, and this really gets into our B-roll, which is fascinating for me as well, is really what's more important now is the collaboration of these different ideas. So what somebody learns from doing this solar sail suddenly helps them understand something about solar rays that helps them improve the efficiency of a solar panel.
Exactly.
And so now the solar panels, instead of needing to take up 3 square miles, mm-hmm. only we can get as much energy out of 1 square mile. I mean, just watching, you're seeing all of these things come together because there is so much of the information that is being gathered is also being shared, you know? And I think that's... So I think, while I agree, I would...
And I'm not saying that, you know, space exploration should end. I'm just saying I feel like they're fueling a lot of time and energy into looking for other solutions. Like you said, why, you know, you asked your kids why. Why would we, or your kids asked you why. Mm. Like, why would we care about this? And it's not that I don't care about it. Obviously I do, or else I wouldn't have sat here trying to understand what you were saying. But, like, the whole purpose behind what they're trying to do is, you know, finding new planets and blah, blah, blah. Like,
boldly go.
I just, it doesn't, it. I just feel like they're better uses of time and money.
I guess this is so interesting to me because that thought never crossed my mind.
Yeah, same here.
I just, the explorer part of me just is like, yes, let's go, do it.
I haven't even explored half of the Earth. Why, you know, I don't want to go.
Have you explored half of Central Florida?
I've explored most of Central Florida.
I kind of know where you're coming from, and I look at, I wish we had, instead of going for Mars, that we had kind of gone back to the moon and maybe built a base there. And started mining that, and started figuring out how it would be to live in an environment other than our planet, and then maybe go from the moon to Mars someday.
A launch pad on the moon seems like it would make a lot of sense, doesn't it?
I think so. And
with the less gravity, it seems like it would be easier to take off.
1/6 the gravity there, and
so it would take 1/6 the fuel to get off the surface. You know,
yes, but they found water on Mars.
Well, and there's those Nazis on the
other
side of the moon.
Multiple times,
they did.
There's a movie
where
Nazis were hiding on the backside of the moon.
Oh.
Which, can I say right now, I would never have thought to look for them there.
But there was a Doctor Who episode where there was water on Mars.
Water on Mars, yeah.
Yeah.
See, because Doctor Who has already
been there. But this is also, we're finding other ways of getting around our neighborhood, you know, other ways to get around the solar system. And put it this way, Danielle, there's a moon on Jupiter where it rains diamonds.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
How's that sound?
He's not messing with you.
No.
Granted,
why?
We can't.
How? I don't understand. See, this is... I don't understand.
See, if you were a little
if
more
If you
spacey.
Had been at Lake Brantley and you had taken Mr. Cutler's class.
Apparently.
Now, I didn't teach you that one. You learned that elsewhere.
Well, this, but we don't have time to get into this. But the terribly short version is
there are waterfalls that go backwards on Earth. I mean, there are all kinds of wonders on Earth that we could discover.
And there are scientists that do that, and there are scientists that do this.
If we all just focus on one thing, well, I feel like that'd be, it'd just get really crowded. You know what I mean? Like, if we're all just studying backwards waterfalls, that's a lot of people.
There's room in the budget for practical things, and we ought to be doing that and solving our huge problems that we have. Yes. And there's also room for some maybe pie in the sky or maybe some things that could transform humanity. So
then why aren't we researching magic and unicorns?
I believe there's probably somebody.
Mic drop.
Don't drop the mic, please. That is $10 of hard-earned money that you're dropping over there.
I'm just saying.
We already lost a mic stand today.
If we're going to be pie in the sky, I've got much bigger pies for them.
I do love pie. So on the same run, our B-roll today, there's this incredibly fascinating article that we posted up last week on the, and I'm going to.
Democratization.
I was going to do
it.
Oh,
no, you would have had it. You
I
had
know.
It
I did.
No, you didn't. I knew you didn't.
I mispronounced it. Like, I don't know why I have such a hard time with.
Okay, well, at least again. So
the democratization of science.
Good job.
And the name of the article is The Democratization of Science Ushers in a New World Order. So here's the and kind of coming off of some of the stuff we've been talking about earlier on the show. The science here that we talked about, you know, SpaceX, and we talked about these postage stamp things that are going into space. None of this is being done by governments. This is being done by private industry. Yes. Now, really quick history lesson for those of you who may not realize this. The space race was this thing that happened back during the Cold War between the United States and Russia. Russia got Sputnik into orbit, the first time man-made anything had gotten into orbit, and we eventually decided – Russia and the United States both looked at the moon and said, go. And it drove – I mean, it was two nations, these two humongous, the most powerful nations on Earth, singularly focused on who could get there first.
And we won.
We did.
Right.
Well, that's what they tell us anyways. If you believe what they say.
And we do. Let's be very clear about this.
Yes, we do.
I'm joking.
Okay. Well, I know that, but just in case anybody else is confused. Like science and technology, but we're pretty sure they faked the moon landing.
Yeah.
So the whole whack the dog, man. You see that movie? That was the anyway, the point here is this is all being done by private companies. So we've gone away from where the governments were financing it, and they've gone to the part where individuals are. And you see this happening, sure, in space, and this is an excellent example, but you're seeing the same thing happen in even biology. There is this there's now stuff out that you can see, you could start to they made up this CRISPR, I think is the name of it, mm-hmm. which provides a quick, not the Panera place, like,
no,
different.
It's CRISPR, it's an acronym,
right? And it provides basically do-it-yourself gene hacking, letting you go in and starting messing around with DNA. And there was, I mean, like, to the point where I'm assuming you have to have a certain level of brain power that exceeds my own. I don't know what the level is, but it's higher than mine.
This is how all of the movies start. That lead to zombies.
Global annihilation of one form or another.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and this is part of the issue here. So you get to the point where there are people who are just doing this as a hobby and are able to hack and change around the DNA of plants, of animals, of insects, of all different types of creatures.
Then make me a unicorn.
Actually, they may be able to make you into a unicorn, which is
no,
really the
point. I don't want to be a unicorn. I want to have a unicorn.
Oh,
that's different. How do you feel about underwater unicorns?
Narwhals?
I'm just saying.
There we go. I like that.
See?
No. I want a real...
The narwhal otter. Okay.
Yeah, there's a little... So the point here is that you've got all of these individuals that are now able to get into this point of gene hacking. And now you've also got individual companies that are putting rockets on, or they're being able to get rockets into space. I mean, the government is essentially out of that game. It is woefully behind on the technology game. We have seen this over and over and over again. We've seen this with...
They're doing the green energies, the...
Exactly.
Elon Musk and...
All of these philanthropists that are now doing this.
Yeah.
And the problem here is that you have the possibility of going the other way. So, for example, the United States and Belgium had worked together to basically modify the H1N1 virus so that it was possible for humans to contract it and for it to be spread from human to human. The H1N1 was the avian flu. It was one of those things that were like one of those superbugs that if it started going human to human, we're all dead.
Mm-hmm. So why did they do that?
No idea. But they actually were asked by the FBI to censor their the publications were asked to censor some of the data so that with the concern that other people, nasty people, could take this.
Bioterrorists.
Exactly.
It's a thing, people.
So here's the question. Here's the part that I'm really interested in. If we understand that the science and technologies that was once regulated to, you know, genius level folks working in expensive labs that were heavily regulated, and now it can be done just anywhere. I mean, here at Factor, we have a drone alliance group that creates drones that can do things that boggle the mind. And they meet here a couple hours every night. They build these drones that do all sorts of insane stuff. And those drones can be used for both good and ill. So at what point should and how does the rest of the world respond to this?
We don't know.
Was that rhetorical?
We don't know. That's the problem.
I was waiting for the four choices for multiple choice.
Well, I guess it's true. It's like there is no real solid answer on it because
if there was, we would know what the answer is.
Take drones for example. We're behind the regulation of them is behind a couple of years behind what the drones were able to do. So finally they're deciding, okay, you can't fly them over the stadium. You can't fly them
can't fly them and spy on your neighbors as they're sunbathing.
Right.
Well, and you know, they actually ran into an issue.
You can't do that?
No. Pretty sure that's illegal.
So.
Oops.
Well, just don't post it on the internet. You'll be. There was actually the California wildfire. They had the firefighters that they were using drones to be able to scout the fire and see where things were going, and they were having to put them down. They couldn't use them because there were too many amateur journalists and other folks that were
also using drones,
right, to snap pictures of it and to see what's going on.
Exactly.
There's been several near misses where some of these things have been missing by inches. And then on the more practical, I mean, even just want to get down to the more geeky stuff. When we talked about Gamergate, we talked about the online harassment, the online cyberbullying, which is rampant throughout high schools, middle schools.
Oh, yeah.
These poor girls that have the audacity to try to be involved in geek culture, and they get harassed, and there is no regulations for it at all. The people that are making the laws have no idea how to turn on their computer, let alone, you know, how to pass an effective law that measures it.
Right. What's a Vine?
Exactly.
You should just stay off the internet, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that is legitimately what people are being told. Yeah. So I think that this is such an interesting point, and I have no idea what to do about it.
Well, the good news, Al, is that they aren't asking you.
Thank God. At no point are congressional lawmakers looking at each other going, get me Al Sterling.
You know what? I have an idea. Why don't our listeners tell us their opinions?
Ugh, those people?
Yeah. Alan.
That was a joke.
Oh
my
gosh.
That was a joke.
All of our listeners are now revolting. No, I would be interested to hear.
They might have been revolting before.
We have some really smart listeners.
Oh, God, I just made a horrible dad joke.
You just did.
Oh, God, I'm sorry, Danielle. Just pause for a moment. I am so sorry to her. I can't believe I just made that dad joke.
I didn't even, like, it didn't even process because okay. I don't listen to dad jokes anymore.
I try not to make them, but I think they may be kind of getting into my
skin. It made you.
Yeah.
That'll be you.
I think it's your fault, Stan. I think he was always bad with the dad jokes.
Was.
I think he's maybe influencing me a little bit.
So anyways, if our listeners are still listening, thank you for that, by the way. why don't you go on our Facebook and comment on this episode and tell us what you think we, the citizens, or the government should do to help regulate some of these crazy things that are about to happen based on all of this privately funded research.
Assuming, of course, that you believe that anything should happen. Because what the current model that even the FBI is following is more of
it's just do whatever you have to do to get it done.
Figure it out as you go.
Well, it's a neighborhood watch idea is actually more of it. So basically the thing is you can – so what if I have an idea for an experiment, I can put together the stuff on it. And even if I don't own the equipment myself, I can get it secondhand or I can farm it out to these laboratories that will run experiments on your behalf. You send them the specs. They run the experiment. They send you back the results. And those are usually confidential. But once you get them, they tend to be shared within communities because we still have this huge online presence, whether it's Reddit or specifically science websites, groups that get together and meet. And so there is a little bit of a neighborhood watch feel where if you notice that somebody seems to be awfully interested in anthrax, you mention that to somebody, which is a good idea. So the, and then you take a look at something like ISIS, where Anonymous, the hacker, the hacktivist yep. community, recently started targeting ISIL social media sites, and so right. and has been attacking them and taking down their sites. So you get into this point of vigilante justice. So I mean, if, I would absolutely love to hear what our listeners think, but what I will mention to you is that there is a school of thought that says we do nothing; we allow the citizens to handle it amongst ourselves.
Well, I think one of the other things that is a problem right now, like we said, the government is always so far behind the scientists on regulating the science. And one of the problems is that we've got, like, the Senate Board for Science, or whatever they're called, they're just a bunch of politicians.
I have an idea.
I would love to see a joint panel that involves both politicians and scientists. Get Neil deGrasse Tyson on there. Get Bill Nye on there.
Bill
Get Stephen
Nye
Hawking
for president.
On there.
That's
so that
the
they can
answer.
Advise them. So that they can explain all of this stuff to them and advise them.
Well,
in a non-political way.
To be fair, when they do panels, they do have experts come in and advise them, but they still make the decision regardless.
But they're not part of the panel.
Right.
Most politicians aren't that interested in being advised in a non-political way.
Right.
They're interested in getting reelected.
So yeah. Stan, you've been following science and technology, let's just say, a little longer than us.
Yes, a lot longer.
So where, I mean, do you, I mean... Does this feel? Does this time feel different than previous? I mean, does this? Do you see this with any concern on your end as you're watching, you know, class after class come through?
Well, not necessarily. What you're talking about here is pretty new because you now have basically private citizens having more knowledge than. You know, maybe the scientists or the people in business, and there is a lot more power that citizens have for good or for bad. For bad might be, you know, if you get some people that want to put together a pressure cooker bomb or something and set it off, and obviously that's pretty scary. Those type of scenarios,
right.
But you also have a. You also have an unlimited possibility for good, so I don't see it as much in the classroom because the kids in the classroom are a little more interested in, you know, 220 and getting out of school and going to
right.
have some fun, you know, and the teachers
Those
are even more so.
Jerks.
You know that, but you know what that reminds me. Back when I was in high school and before, instead of the internet, we had bulletin board systems because
yep.
I'm approximately 1,000 years old, and I remember something called the Jolly Roger Cookbook. Did you ever come across this?
Uh-huh.
I actually had a copy of it myself, and basically what it was a book, an online kind of manual on how to create all sorts of stuff. Napalm, like homemade napalm, homemade bombs, how to break into doors, how to do all sorts of
Wait,
things.
Wait, you had this as a kid?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know
he
you're
didn't
Iranian,
use it. He just read it.
Right?
Yeah, I know. Well, this was before 9/11, so it was okay.
Russians were still the bad guys back then.
Yeah, yeah. No, I
It was communist back then, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I actually was white until 2001. around September 2001,
no,
I suddenly
weren't.
Became brown in a real big way.
No, you weren't. You just confused people. That's all it was.
Is that what it was? Yeah. So this knowledge has been out there, and it wasn't even terribly hard to do these things like homemade napalm. I mean,
right.
you know, there's the bombs that you can make out of fertilizer. That stuff has been available for anybody who's been looking around for a really long time, and you don't see that happening often at all. I mean, comparatively speaking, you know. I mean, once is arguably too often, I guess. But I guess it has a little bit to do with how you feel about your how much faith you have in your fellow man, which in my instance is none at all. But, you know, it could be wrong.
Depends on who the man is.
Right. So the last little bit I wanted to share on this one, and as in researching this, I got with, for geek's sake, senior military advisor, who we're not allowed to share his name.
Because we'd have to kill you.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm literally not to share his name, which is crazy because he keeps telling me things.
We'll just call him that guy.
Yeah, that might be good. So this is all public knowledge. There's nothing confidential here. I am not sharing anything confidential in any way, shape, or form. But you're
gonna get that guy killed.
No, actually,
it could
he'll be
made confidential later, and then. No.
Well, actually, I might end up killed. I think he'll be fine. He'll be
okay.
So he said that part of the stuff is what the government's response is, and specifically the military response here. And he described he explained what in the military circles is known as a third offset. So the first offset was nuclear weapons, came out right after World War II, where we offset the other country's abilities because we had nuclear weapons and the technology to use them and the other countries didn't. So we continued to advance and left our enemies, we'll just leave that as a broad term, on their heels as they scrambled to try to keep up with us as we continued to advance. The second offset came during Vietnam with precision-guided missiles. Again, same basic idea. We had them, we continued to develop them, and other countries scrambled to keep up. Well, both instances, other countries have now caught up. So they have what they're now referring to as the third offset. And if you're interested, you can look this up, type in third offset, and you'll find a bunch of stuff on it. And it has five different main areas that you can pull down on. But one of the main the main theme of the third offset is man-machine integration. So this is stuff like exosuits.
Bionic.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. So this is stuff like exosuits, like exosquad level stuff. Mm-hmm. When you've seen the stuff going where they can use the machine, they're strapped into an external mechanical skeleton to pick up incredibly heavy
so
items.
So the third offset is Iron Man.
Kind of, yes, but not just like that. It also has to do with AI, it has to do with drones, it has to do, there's five major components to it, and you can kind of look it up. But it's really interesting to see how how the military is finding a lot of these applications, which, like a lot of other military advancements, have applications for the private sector. I mean, a suit that enables you to pick up something really heavy mm-hmm. would be useful for more than just soldiers. I mean, that could be useful for everything from construction, prosthetic mm-hmm. limbs.
Me, because I'm really weak.
Well, people that have to lift
boxes.
And people that have legitimately like debilitating diseases of one form or fashion. Mm-hmm. Also, people who just aren't strong enough. You know, so there's that part. I think is the final little kind of point here on the government actually kind of going forward. So, anyway. Yeah, we would love to hear what you guys think about all this. So feel free to make a comment on the Facebook page. Let us know how you think about what you think about Danielle's spaciness.
Yeah, also I'd like to know why you think we should go to other planets. Maybe I'm wrong.
To seek out new life and new civilizations.
Don't say that. I want
to go where no man has gone before.
I want to hear other ideas.
Or woman.
No person, actually. They changed it.
Oh, that's true.
All right, anyways. Yeah.
I mean, that was off the top of my head. I just came up with that.
I think we're running, like, so late right now.
No, we're only a couple minutes over.
Maybe
we're good.
We should, you know.
All right, let's get into our shameless plugs. Danielle, do you have anything you want to shamelessly plug?
I do. Watch Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt Season 2, please.
All right. That's pretty good.
It's really good. Nice and also, you. Also, Tilda makes an appearance as a painting on a guy's truck. Which is
kind of cool. It's pretty good. All right, Dan, what about you?
As always, you can find Epic Events at epiceventsorlando.com for all your DJ services needs.
Since when?
I know, it's brand new. He just launched it.
Right?
It's pretty exciting.
Oh, my gosh.
I am going to shamelessly plug. I'll get to him in a second. You want me to do him now?
So
do him?
Rude.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I have to. You get to go first, or like third.
Well, I wasn't prepared to shamelessly plug, but I'll plug my school, Lake Brantley. Obviously,
heck yeah.
By the caliber of you two young men, you can see what an awesome school it is.
We're not a great example. I promise they're doing much better than us. Yes. There's much, much better alumni.
Yeah, like Becca.
Yeah. See, yeah, there are lots of. So how long have you been teaching over there?
Two.
2 years?
No, too long.
Too long? Oh.
Did you have...
I did not see that one coming.
You just said 2 years. Did you graduate last year now?
I'm just asking because I thought maybe he was...
Because I had him as a junior. I know that.
Was Becca in your class?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Rebecca Rayborn? She was a twin.
The name sounds familiar. Red hair?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah,
very
actually.
Good.
Yeah.
Short hair.
Well, she's one of my best friends.
Oh, so. Okay.
Yeah, she'll be happy I said that on the show because she thinks
good.
She's my
Hi,
only
Rebecca.
Best friend.
So been teaching for a super long time.
I actually started my first year teaching was 1986, and I had a couple of years out where I was in business. But and I actually the last job that I had was picking up pieces of the Challenger after the Challenger disaster in 86 as they were trying to figure out what caused that. So I've had the space tie-in for a while, so I'm real happy that you guys invited me here for this topic.
Yeah, that's wow, that's crazy. Yeah. So 86, that means super long time.
Super long time.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right, very good. Yeah, taught us back in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and then kept teaching for some reason. I would have assumed we had to be,
we didn't break him. I was surprised by that.
I guarantee there's at least four or five teachers that stopped teaching immediately after, or maybe during our class.
No, there was.
Anyway, so plug anything else you'd like to plug?
Nah, no other plugs.
All right. So I'm actually gonna plug SimCity.
They need it.
What's that?
They need it. Nobody's heard of that.
I randomly picked up the game recently. I've been.
What system are you playing it on? What is this?
I'm playing
SimCity
on Origin. Is the name of the Origin now offers this $5 a month to access.
What is Origin?
Origin is like Steam.
Oh, so it's for your computer?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all. I'm only playing. You don't want to play a game like SimCity on anything other than a computer. You know, the consoles. I mean, you could. I guess there are some SimCity games available for like for Xbox and whatever, but they're not really.
Is SimCity like where you go and you have babies and stuff?
That's The Sims.
Okay.
But it's no, but it's very. I mean, it's from the same makers and is the same basic line.
That's a spinoff.
Yeah. So The Sims is the city. SimCity is the The SimCity is the city level. You make a city. You see if you can get it up and running. And
so she is interested in making babies.
See, well, that's
okay.
Nope.
I'm sorry. Go ahead with your SimCity.
Good night, everybody. We're bringing back the animated
with
references
my
too.
Husband. Let's clarify.
Well, I didn't say. Well,
you needed to clarify.
No,
we
said earlier you don't want to know anything about babies. All right.
No,
go ahead.
I said I don't know anything about babies.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry.
That was pre-show.
Willing to learn though.
SimCity. It was a lot more fun than I kind of enjoyed it, and I'm actually currently pretty thoroughly hooked on it. If I wasn't here, I'd be ignoring my kids and playing SimCity. So,
so you can't play it on your phone?
I wouldn't want to. It would be really complicated to really not play terribly well. But it was really interesting. So Origin has got this new thing. You can download Origin and play a bunch of EA games and things like that. And they $5 a month gets you access to a bunch of different games. So I went ahead and did it because I didn't want to pay a full $25 for SimCity because I doubt I'll play it for more than a month. So I gave them $5. We'll play it for a month and see if it matters. But so far, I'm really, really enjoying it.
Can't
so,
you just like find it for free somewhere?
You can play it for $5.
I don't want to pay $5.
Then don't play SimCity. I don't know. There's not like I don't have a whole lot of other options for
you'll
you.
You'll be okay.
I like free things.
Okay. Well, so do I. Mm. All right. Okay. We're also plugging three things. We're also shamelessly plugged freestyle. We love it. Danielle, tell them where to find us.
You can find us on Facebook at For Geeks' Sake, exactly how you'd imagine it. Please go on there, like our page, share our posts. Make sure you comment on this episode post and let us know what you think about all of our spacey stuff. And Al's laughing at me because he loves when I say spacey. And
keeps the professionalism up.
Yeah. You can find us on the Twitter at @4 Geeks Sake, 2 S's. And we have a lovely, lovely woman running our Twitter, Miss
Elizabeth.
And it was recently her birthday. So
that's
happy
right.
birthday,
happy
Elizabeth.
Happy birthday, Elizabeth.
Yay. And yeah, so you can find us on your native podcasting app. I use Pocket Cast. Some people use Shout Engine. Some people use iTunes. Just find us, rate us, love us, subscribe, share it with your grandmother for crying out loud. Why is no one sharing with your
all right,
grandmother?
Don't forget, coming up soon, you can find us at GeekStreetStation.com.
That's right. And don't forget, Hourglass Brewery, May 20th, 7 p.m. Come on out. Join us. Have a beer. It'll be a great time. So I believe that is going to do it. So on behalf of myself, Mr. Cutler, Lake Brantley High School,
all right.
and all of the fantastic folks here at For Geek's Sake and Geek Street Station, this is Al Sterling saying, perhaps because it is there is not sufficient reason for climbing a mountain. No, apparently not.
You're so stupid.
Stop.
Okay, I'm good.